From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. I'm Justin Spears, joined here by Ryan Finley and Michael Lev of the Arizona Daily Star. And don't forget to subscribe to the Wildcast podcast on Apple Podcasts and download the app available on the App Store and Google Play. And we have a fun new feature on the Wildcaster app. You can be a part of the Wildcast podcast and future podcasts because it's a comment and you follow the directions, record your comment, and we'll use the audio for the next podcast.
Absolutely. It becomes a call-in show, but without you having to wait on hold and with us being able to filter the good questions from the bad ones. It's kind of great.
It's fun.
It's really easy, too.
You're doing it right now.
I'm looking at it on your phone. I'm looking at it. Yeah, it's really easy.
Mm-hmm. That would be very meta if he left a question for his own podcast on his app during the podcast. Anyway.
Be awesome. So, guys, Pac-12 season. It's underway for the Arizona Wildcats, even though we've had a couple teasers in the previous 2 weeks. But the Arizona Wildcats, they head into their first road game or first Pac-12 road game of the season against Oregon State. They are currently 1-2. A weird state for the Arizona Wildcats. Just for you guys, what have you taken away from the non-conference slate?
Oh man, I don't know. I think that Arizona is probably generously one win less than most people would have thought. I don't know if everybody thought they'd go 3-0, but everybody figured they'd go at least 2-1.
Yeah.
I think it's been very much a tale of big men on both sides of the ball. Their offensive line was really, I think, probably the culprit for their first two losses, and certainly played a little bit better last week now that they got some guys back. But this is still very much a work in progress, right? Arizona beat a Southern Utah team last week that is nothing to write home about. And now they get an Oregon State team that I think is, beat the pants off of that Southern Utah team.
Yeah.
And so, it's baby steps, right? They beat a team that they would always beat last week. Now they're going to play a team that they should beat. And we'll see how they do and whether or not they'll be ready at all for USC next week.
I would say that we expected some growing pains on the offensive side of the ball. New system, right? Kind of a new responsibilities and fundamentals for Khalil Tate to learn, timing, footwork, passing from the pocket, etc. Mm-hmm. Plus the offensive line issues that you mentioned, all that kind of added up to, you kind of figured it wouldn't be a smooth running operation, right? My biggest disappointment the first three games is the defense.
Yes.
And I know they've had a lot of injuries on that side of the ball. Like Jace Whitaker has barely played. Scotty Young barely played. PJ Johnson, missed the last two games, etc. But to me, those are all excuses. We got a third-year defensive coordinator. We've got tons more experience on that side of the ball. And they just haven't gotten it done. They haven't been able to stop the run, which was Marcel Yates' biggest stated goal coming into the season. They haven't forced turnovers, and we've seen when this defense doesn't force turnovers, there are problems.
I would be more patient had this been Kevin Sumlin's guy who had been with him at previous stops.
And they were learning a new system, right?
The fact is, sort of this wave of populism spread over the Arizona football program, last January or so, and kind of led by Khalil Tate. They hired Kevin Sumlin, who was the player's choice. And then the players also really rallied around the defensive coordinator, Marcel Yates. And the thought, I think, was that the defense could hold them up a little bit while the offense learned Sumlin's new system. And it's been almost the opposite. I've seen more quote unquote growing pains out of the defense than I have out of the offense. And what is that? I mean, I'm not an X's and O's expert, but to me, the safety play has not been good. Defensive back play has not been good. They've been guilty of getting, chunked deep for yardage, even against, my goodness, they allowed 31 points to Southern Utah.
Yeah.
At what point do we start wondering if the decision to retain Marcel Yates was a mistake or not?
Michael, you have a story that's available on the Wildcaster app and Tucson.com. Cat stats. Do we saw that cool logo with the?
Oh yeah.
Damn right, we have that cool logo. That's the reason to do the story. Yes.
Michael, you broke down Arizona's third down woes, and they have allowed opponents 44.2%. on their third downs,
which is actually better than the last two seasons,
but not
sadly
good.
Enough.
But not
still,
good.
You're 109th in the country mm-hmm. on third downs. I mean, especially for a team that the defense is supposed to be much better than the offense, yeah, considering they still have their defense coordinator. Did it surprise you when you looked back at and saw the film?
Here's what surprised me the most. When you look at third and seven or more, 41.4%, I think, was the figure. And that should be in the 30s, the low 30s.
Yeah.
12 of 29 of those have been converted. Like, when you're on defense, what do you want to put – what situation do you want to put the offense into?
Right, third and
third
forever.
And long, yeah. Right? That's the goal. Like, I remember when I used to play Madden a lot, like, when you get the other team in third and goal, you'd be all excited, and then you'd be so demoralized if they converted that third and long. And I'm sure it's the same sort of feeling that comes over the actual real life defenders when that happens. And it's happened repeatedly this season. So my conclusion after kind of going through all of these numbers was that really the pass rush is the number one biggest issue that's really been missing. We finally saw a couple sacks against Southern Utah, but it took what, into the third game before to even get a single sack. That's a huge problem. Kylan Wilborn played better in that game, but I think Arizona needs to get more out of him. J.B. Brown and Jalen Harris are a couple of promising second-year players, but they're still second-year players who are kind of figuring it out. So once again, they're going to have to try to manufacture a pass rush by blitzing. And they did more blitzing in this last game. They blitzed the linebackers a lot up the middle. I saw a corner blitz. They're going to have to use a variety of people and a variety of formations and a variety of different, pressure packages to manufacture it, because rushing with just the front four, it's not getting it done.
Well, and it's funny. I mean, wasn't it Marcel Yates who told you in camp that his goal was to blitz less?
Oh yeah, of course. No coordinator like wants to blitz. Like, if you can get away with rushing four and dropping seven, I mean, that's a great formula, mm-hmm, right? I think I've referenced this on previous podcasts. Like, those great Giants defenses that were able to beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, that was kind of their formula, right? Like, we got this awesome front four, and we're going to drop everyone else into coverage. I mean, that's the way to do it, if you can do it, but you have to have special players to do that, and I'm not sure Arizona has that.
Yeah, I was going to say, that New York Giants team, their defensive line was Michael Strahan, Justin Tuck, yeah, O.C. Right. Umanure, yeah, like, elite guys. Arizona doesn't have one. They don't have any guys.
Well, and to me, I guess it's funny because they talk about inexperience and they talk about lack of depth. Well, isn't that a problem a lot of bad programs have, right? I mean, you return nine starters. I don't care if Chase Whitaker hasn't played much. There should be a backup who knows the defense. There should be somebody who's at least capable, maybe not against Oregon or against Washington, but somebody who can keep you from giving up 30 to Southern Utah. Am I overreacting to that, Michael? Do you
feel differently at all about the BYU result after BYU went to Wisconsin and won there?
Yes and no.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
A little bit, right?
Yeah. I mean, it looks good for Arizona because they went up and beat a top 10 team in the country, a team that a lot of people thought they could compete for the college football playoff. That was a good win for them, but at the same time, they also lost to Cal. So right, that you gotta just take with a grain of salt.
I think it was a bad matchup for Arizona for the first game, especially. They're a super physical team that runs multiple tight end sets and I formation and fullback and
right, with a new coordinator. Right.
You know, like, just stuff that you're just not gonna see very often, especially with Washington and Stanford not being on the schedule. Mm-hmm. This year, I think if their schedule had been like Southern Utah first, Houston second, BYU third, maybe they'd be 2-1 right now, because the offense would have been in maybe better shape and they would have been able to just score more points against that BYU team, and maybe, you know, kind of put them in a situation where they had to pass. They didn't ever really had to pass in that game, because it was either even or they were ahead. They were able to kind of ground and pound.
Right.
And that was just that's a good formula, and that's what I fully expect Oregon State to do, because they have the leading rusher in the Pac-12 and Jamar Jefferson, this freshman who's kind of they discovered sort of by accident because their starter got hurt, which mm-hmm, I mean, we've seen that happen here, right? And
yeah,
Brandon
Khalil
Dawkins
Tate
got hurt, and yeah, Khalil Tate came in. So, fun fact for you guys: last year's game against the Beavers, Khalil threw seven passes the entire game. completed 5, 68 yards.
What about the rushing?
It's efficient.
534 yards, school record.
Wow.
They had 3 100-yard rushers. Khalil rushed for 206. Two other guys had over 100. 7 rushing touchdowns.
Who are the other two guys? Was it Zach Green and J.J. Taylor, if I'm not mistaken? I'm sorry. I'm making you look it up right now.
That's okay.
Do you think, Michael, that current coaches look at last year's strategy and try to build off of that?
I mean, you have to some degree, but we don't know how healthy Khalil Tate really is.
Right.
Yeah. Right?
Right.
And there's also, you know, some questions about I don't know how to put this lightly, but his willingness to run. I mean, he hasn't shown a great
desire.
I don't want to say desire.
Sense of urgency.
I don't want to say desire.
Right.
Right. That's not a word I want to use in this situation, but it just seems like for whatever reason, he's trending in the direction of trying to become more of a pocket passer and not put himself in harm's way by running into traffic. And the one time that he did that against Southern Utah, he ended up getting hurt again, right? Again, we've talked about this on the podcast before. I don't know how bad the ankle is. It is impossible for us to know how much pain he's actually in. When I rewatched the game against Southern Utah, what it seemed like he couldn't do was like really push off and take off, you know, running straight up the field. Like running side to side didn't seem to be a huge problem, but you know, maybe it's that one kind of movement where, you know, I need to make that split second decision, put my foot in the ground and go. And that's what he can't do right now because that ankle is tender.
When we talk about a willingness or whatever that would be, to me, the next question becomes why. Is he not running because his coaches are telling him not to run? Is he not running because Brock Osweiler didn't run when he ran Noel Mazzoni's offense at ASU? Or is he not running because he thinks the best way to get into the NFL is to stay upright in college, don't get hurt, and throw the ball deep?
It's just my thing is Lamar Jackson from Louisville.
Perfect comp.
That's what a lot of people said that he needed to do. He needed to become a pocket passer. Mm-hmm. He didn't eliminate the running game at all. Right. He still was able to destroy teams with his legs and still also be able to pass the ball. So I think Khalil Tate needs to look at Lamar Jackson's last year and kind of replicate that a little bit.
Is it just circumstantial? Is it just the game plan against BYU was we're going to throw the ball, we can beat them on the perimeter, plus the fact that BYU ran this junk defense, basically, where they're mush rushing three guys and using their biggest, most athletic defensive end as a spy. And then in the first quarter of the Houston game, Tate gets hurt. And that really limits him for the rest of the game. And then in the first half of the Southern Utah game, he gets hurt again, and that really limits him. And they didn't need to do it.
Right.
You know, I think in my first story I wrote for this week, I think the lead was something like, are we going to see the full Khalil Tate experience anytime soon? And I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is. I mean, when you look at those stats from last year's game, I mean, that's startling. Mm-hmm. You know, I would be completely shocked if we saw anything remotely resembling that game plan this week. And I don't know if that's because Khalil is injured or it's just not the way they want to do things anymore. But when you look at those numbers, you sort of feel like, hey, Arizona should try to come out and run the ball, right? Whether it's with Khalil or with the running backs.
Right. And we talked about this last week, too. Or, well, I did. I broke out this conspiracy theory when we were at Frog and Firkin. Is, you know, what if they started off super vanilla and are trying to incorporate more and more and more as you go? To me, that maybe next week would be sort of that pinnacle, right? With USC here, big opponent in conference play.
Bust out all the tricks.
But USC, by the way, is terrible according to their fan base.
Oh, yeah, well,
right?
Yeah.
They're like the worst team in the country,
right.
Pretty much. That's the feeling I've gotten from them. And the sky is like falling on the campus over there in LA.
Yeah, they're the worst for a thousand reasons, aren't they? Like it's either they're the greatest team ever or the worst team ever, and there's kind of nothing in between. Though that's not something that they have, that USC has cornered the market on. Arizona fans can be like that too. But
that's just kind of college football fans in general, isn't it?
But with Tate, my question, I guess, becomes is do we see a couple more wrinkles this week? Now that it's conference play, these games are the ones that really matter. It's a winnable game on the road. It may be a chance to build a little bit of confidence. It may be a chance to play some guys who haven't gotten a ton of looks. Is this the week we see J.J. Taylor more involved? Is this the week that we see a tight end catching a pass in a football game? Is this the week that maybe we see more vertical running out of Khalil Tate? I'm not sure.
I don't know what we're going to see from Khalil.
Right.
I really don't. And I feel like we've gone into every game kind of saying the same thing for a variety of reasons. I just sort of keep waiting for that play where they're going to run a zone read and he's going to see the opening and he's just going to take off down the field and no one's going to catch him, you know? Because I think he can run pretty fast still in a straight line, regardless of how the ankle is. Like, you saw him sprinting to celebrate with his teammates after throwing all those touchdown passes this past week. It's just something about the cutting that just maybe isn't there right now. I don't think we're going to see a lot of schematic differences on offense. I think they've kind of found what works for them. I talked to Justin about this on the podcast on Monday, just more of a pistol look, which is, it's kind of a cross between being under center and shotgun, and you can just do more play action stuff out of that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's going to be the most effective way for them to move the ball, is either kind of an RPO or a play action out of the pistol, where you still have the threat of the run with either the quarterback or running back, and then it opens up a lot of space in the secondary.
How many touchdowns did we see against Southern Utah where it was play action?
I think it was all of them.
Pretty much all of them felt
like.
Wow.
Really?
I don't have that
right in front of me, but I feel like it might have been all of them. I'll try to check while we're doing this.
Yeah. Cause I remember.
Wow.
Yeah. Cause the first touchdown, that was the Tony Ellison. That was play action right there.
Right.
I know that one was for sure.
And even like the non-touchdown plays, the explosive plays that Kevin Sumlin was trying to get out of his offense, like that 53-yard bomb to Devon Cooper. I mean, pretty sure that was play action as well. So maybe Arizona did find their bread and butter against Southern Utah, and maybe that could be something that works for them in the future.
I need to keep better notes. That's what I'm learning. I'm trying to find this.
So Arizona enters this week as a 6.5-point favorite. Is that too much for Arizona? Is that perfect, or?
Michael and I disagree, I think, about the nature of the Oregon trip. Why don't you go first?
Well, okay. I think it's too much.
Okay.
And for a few reasons. One, I mean, what has Arizona shown us so far that merits that big of a point spread?
Right.
Okay. Number two, every time they've gone to the Pacific Northwest in recent years, they've gotten killed, whether it was Oregon State, Oregon, Washington State, or Washington. Doesn't matter who the opponent is, they have just gotten crushed up there. And number three, Oregon State is better than they were a year ago. Maybe not better on defense, but they're definitely better on offense. So, I mean, remember the scores of those games against Colorado and Cal last year? 45-42, 45-44, I think, was the... Was the Cal game. I think we're going to see something like that again, where it's going to be a difference of 3 or 4 points.
Right. If I were in Vegas and I saw that point spread, you know what I would do? I'd just keep walking. I got no idea whether or not that's good enough. I mean, I think on paper, Arizona is better. I think on paper, Arizona should beat and maybe beat badly this Oregon State team. And it's only because I think that they return better players. I think that they have more firepower offensively. This defense cannot be as bad as it's looked the previous 3 weeks. But my goodness, I mean, not to sound like a football coach here, it's hard to win on the road, man. It's hard to win on the road. It's hard to go far, far away and win a football game. Mm. To the point where I believe under Mike Stoops, they went like 2 or 3 years without winning a Pac-12 road game.
Wow.
And your average fan doesn't understand just how hard it is. Even Oregon State, Michael and I were talking off mic. that's a tough place if you're a visitor. It's not the biggest stadium, Reser Stadium, but they're right on top of you. It gets loud.
Oh yeah.
My guess is, I know they're staying in Eugene, which is about a half hour or so away from Corvallis. They're probably flying directly from Tucson to Eugene, but just, that trip in general it's a pain. I mean, for, you know, normal people like me, I mean, I'm flying into I'm flying into Portland and, you know, then driving an hour and a half down to Corvallis. One good thing is the weather should be really nice for football. And you get that nice 1 o'clock start. But I think it is hard, but they need to win this game if they're going to have any chance of making a bowl game.
Oh yeah.
Am I right?
Oh yeah.
I mean, they've got to go minimum of 5-4 in the Pac-12. You would our power rankings every week, I think we've had Oregon State last, and most people would probably consider them to be the the least talented team in the conference from, you know, 1 through 85. So in that sense, this is kind of a must win. Plus, then you're 2-2, right? Going into that USC game, maybe you can sort of start to feel good about things. Maybe you can kind of envision the possibility of an upset, which this person sitting to my left, Ryan Finley, has mapped out for quite a while now. He's like, I think they can win 2 in a row and then maybe upset USC, and then this whole thing flips around. And we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but you have to win this game in order to set up that scenario.
You know, it's funny, kind of going out in left field here a little bit. Rich Rodriguez, when he was at Arizona, say what you will about him, I thought he was a very good in-game coach. I thought they were, I mean, we saw this. They'd jump up and bite a better team once a year. Right?
Yeah.
They'd beat some team they had no business beating. And that I always thought that they were very well prepared. I thought they came in after halftime well prepared. And that if this were most years, I'd say USC better watch its back, because Arizona's Rich Rod scheme is different and they don't get killed at home. Well, my question is, looking at Kevin Sumlin and this team, and Michael, I know it's way too early. Do you think this team is well coached through 3 games?
Oof, man, that's really hard to say. Offensively, they've gotten better, mm-hmm. at least since starting with, let's say, the second half of the Houston game. And like I said, there was always going to be kind of a transition period with an entirely new staff and a new way of doing things, new play calling system, new names for the plays, different cadence, different offensive alignment. Mm-hmm. And there's just a lot going on there. The skill position guys were kind of the same, but man, it's tough when you're swapping out almost the entire offensive line, new center to work with. So it's hard to say. Defensively, man, I can't really say they've been super well coached just based on the results so far. The results have not been there. How much of that is coaching? How much of that is talent? How much of that is the other guys, you know, being good? I don't know. But, you know, the defensive staff has a lot to prove. I'll put it that way.
I think this is a question for maybe after the USC game.
Yeah.
Because, again, I say that the offensive line has improved. But, again, the game that they really improved was against Southern Utah.
Right.
I mean, all of the improvements were against an FCS opponent. So I'm just sitting here. Like, we have to wait until.
But that was also the USC game. But that was also the first game with Leif Freck back, who was their best
attitude
lineman by far, right? Attitude mm-hmm. and experience. And then, yeah, I thought it was interesting. Josh McCauley? I think he was talking about this. Putting Cody on the left side, he said that those were their two most athletic linemen.
Yep.
And they do a lot of plays where both the guard and the tackle pull on the same play. So you can sort of see the possibilities there, right? I mean, you'd think with those guys being on the left side that they would run to the left a lot, but they were still running to the right, and I think that's because Cody and Lath can both pull out, you know, to that side and kind of lead plays and stuff like that.
My question to you guys is, we've had you've been at those Tuesday media availabilities. Who's the most interesting player on this Arizona team? Because it seems like every week there's just a different story. Like Jalen Cochran, he is the grandson of like a gospel singer.
What? Who?
Yeah.
Who?
True. Look, Esther V. Smith.
Yeah.
She's okay. A professional evangelist, basically.
Wow.
Yeah. He's an interesting character. I mean, Theo Lacusa, who's been relegated to the bench, he's got an interesting story. There's a lot of guys. I don't know. I love talking to Jalen Cochran this week because he's just been through a lot of stuff. You know, he got homesick at the end of his first year here, and he basically announced that he was transferring, and then he went back home, and his grandmother told him, no, you're going back to Arizona. So
gave him some gospel.
So he came, the gospel of Esther. So he came back, and then 1 week into the season, he got hurt, and he was out for the year, and he was talking just a lot about, like, you know, that gave me an opportunity to kind of work on myself, you know, and now he's in a position with Justin Bell not being hurt where he's a big part of that rotation. And this was, you know, he's a 3-star recruit, so you don't want to say it was like big time, but someone who Michigan State expressed interest in, who's got size and ability and potential. And like I said at the beginning, they need someone to emerge as a pass rusher, whether it's him or J.B. Brown or Jalen Harris or someone on the inside, Anthony Pandy. Mm-hmm. One thing we haven't seen from the defense, and this is pretty inside baseball here, but they at times last year would use this dime package where like one defensive, they'd have like one down lineman and like a bunch of linebackers and a bunch of DBs. I haven't seen that formation one single time this year. So I'm wondering if that's maybe something that they've been saving that they're going to break out.
One down lineman. So everybody else is just standing up on the line.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Fintan Connolly, I believe, was the one lineman. And then they brought Pandy in. And then everyone else, I think, was defensive back. So I think it was like a 1-4, like a kind of a 1-4-6, right? Mm-hmm. That's a dime, right?
Six defensive backs.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe we'll see that if they can get – they got to try something on these third and long situations because that's just killing them.
Yeah.
Jalen Harris, by the way, I think I texted you this 2 weeks ago. Man, does that kid look good in a uniform. He is somebody who, if he can put on 35 pounds in the next 2 years – I mean, that's an NFL body.
Right, right. He has the size and the length that you want in a pass rusher. You know, he's just still – I think he was maybe 210 last year, right. And now he's like 230 or 235. And he's about 6'5", I would say. So he can get up into that 260 range pretty, you know, and still be able to move. Mm-hmm. He could be someone. The question is, like, when is that going to happen? You know, if that doesn't happen until next year, that doesn't really help them right now.
Channeling my inner Ryan Finley here.
You.
Mixing my sports metaphors.
Sports metaphors.
Long arms.
Long arms.
Shot blocker. Just like in basketball.
Exactly.
Rushing the quarterback, uses long arms, swat the ball down.
Yeah. Well, and you look at the trends in the NFL now, right? I mean, even somebody like Roquan Smith, who, Michael, you may be a little familiar with. I mean, he's sort of a long-levered guy, isn't he? As is the D-lineman who the Bears drafted, or linebacker, Bears drafted a year ago. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys, if you look like that and if you can play a little bit, some team will give you some money to play on Sundays. Can I offer who my most interesting Wildcat is?
Who?
Brett Rodriguez. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, the story of the year, not in Tucson, the story of the year in college bleeping football would be if Khalil Tate grabs his leg on Saturday, is forced to exit the game, and the son of the man you fired is now your quarterback with your team on the ropes. That is a story unlike any in college football. I mean, we looked a couple weeks ago. There are a few examples of it happening. Like Kevin Kraft did it a decade ago at San Diego State. But there are very, I mean.
Jerry Neuheisel, right?
Yeah, but Jerry wasn't there when his dad was fired. Jerry was still a commit when his dad was fired. So to me, that's the most interesting. I mean, this is a kid who essentially got a scholarship to the U of A because his father was the coach. His biggest plus was that he knew the offense because he had been going over it since he was 6 years old. Then they changed the offense. And yet he still is, I think, very smart. The reports that I've heard from practice and from games is that he makes the right decision every time. He just doesn't have the physical tools maybe to be super successful at this level.
Not that I would ever wish an injury on somebody, but that would be an awesome story to write. If that happened in Oregon State and Brett Rodriguez led them to a victory or threw the winning touchdown pass or something. I mean, right. They've kind of shielded him from us for, you know, understandable reasons because they probably don't want us to ask a bunch of questions about what happened with his dad and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But if he won the game for them, I think they'd have no choice but to bring him into the post-game interview room.
Well, and he's a wonder, and you've talked to him before.
Oh, I mean, really smart kid.
Wonderful,
yeah.
Wonderful kid. Yeah.
Real quick, guys, before we go.
Yeah.
On this day 4 years ago was the world famous Hail Mary against Cal.
Okay.
Arizona scores 36 points in the fourth quarter to overcome. Man, what was that deficit? They were down by like, what?
35.
Right?
Well, if they scored 36.
Oh, yeah. They won. They won 45-44, right?
Right.
So, man, talk about one heck of a comeback. Ryan, you weren't there.
I was here. I think it was my first sort of full season as our sports editor. It was one of those awful 7:45 starts. And we had like a midnight deadline. And we're standing around the TV waiting for that pass to fall incomplete so we can get moving, right? Because at that point we had maybe 40 minutes to get the paper out. Mm-hmm. And he catches it. And it's great. And, you know, I ran back to the print shop. It's as close as I've ever been to saying stop the presses. I walked back there and I went, we need more time, you know, because, I mean, we had to sort of rewrite everything, right? Every story was rewritten on deadline. We had to wait for photos to come in. And Kelly Presnell, I believe, was the one who got the photo we had on A1 and it was, or B1. It was, you know, Austin Hill catching the pass. Dave Ord, who's our copy editor and the king of headlines, came up with Hail Mary. And it's hilarious. I got, believe it or not, phone calls for weeks from people who asked why we misspelled Hail in the headline. And I go, man, Come on.
Look at the gosh, look at people. The, look at the caption of the photo.
I'd sit there, I'd be like, you know who caught the touchdown? Austin Hill. Say it again. Austin Hill. Oh, like that happened multiple times a day for weeks.
So but, I obviously wasn't here at that time. The final score was 49-45.
Okay.
They were down 28-6 at the half. They were down 31-13 midway through the third quarter. They were down 45-30 with 5:21 left, and they scored, you know, three touchdowns in the last 3 minutes and 30 seconds, which is just
is that
that's absurd.
That's good. Yeah,
that's good. That's absurd.
How show me Anu Solomon's stat line from that game. It's just incredible.
That was peak Anu, right?
It was
47 of 73, 520 yards, five touchdowns and two picks. Also rushed 16 times for a net of 46 yards.
Yeah. That's a heck of a stat line. So,
73 pass attempts.
There was 74 for Arizona. Do you remember who attempted that?
No.
Yeah. There were 74 total passing attempts.
Really?
Anu Solomon had 73.
Didn't Anu have 70 plus against USC also that same season? Caleb Jones had 13 catches for 186 yards and three touchdowns. Austin Hill was 8 for 127 and 2. Mm-hmm. So,
of course, yeah, what was it? 65 yards? What was the Hail Mary?
Oh, the distance.
Total yards. Was it like 63 yards? Something like that?
Was Pac-12 After Dark already a thing at that time?
I think it became a thing that night.
After that.
It might have. It was 47
yards. Ah, okay. 47 yards. Still pretty good.
Still.
Sure.
That's impressive. I remember that night like it was yesterday.
Really?
That was crazy.
Where were you? Who were you then?
I was actually doing play-by-play for Camp Student Radio.
So you have that call somewhere?
I still have that call.
Justin was like in eighth grade.
I was like 12.
What was your call? Do you remember?
Like what I said?
Was it, I don't believe what I just saw? Was it, he caught the ball, What was it?
I was like, Austin Hill caught the ball. Oh my goodness, Arizona wins the game. It was the most like tackiest, cheesiest, like typical, like, just like Joe Tessitore. Joe Tessitore He always gets everybody into the game. All right, well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, and as always, download the Wildcaster app available on the App Store and Google Play. For Michael, for Ryan, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.